सुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवी सरस्वती व्यास ततो जयमुदीरये। Thank you very much. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text number 39. As explained yesterday, here on forwards, the theme in the Bhagavad Gita, specifically chapter 2, is Krishna consciousness, the specific subject of Krishna consciousness. Now just remember that the context is whether we should do something or not do something should be first based on the idea that I'm not this body, I'm the soul. Secondly, we have prescribed duties according to our own modes of nature that we have acquired. Though the word modes of nature has not been used so far, that's what's implied, and it will be elaborated by the Lord later on. Now, Krishna speaks of the essence, the real essence of one's prescribed duties. What is the essence common to every prescribed duty, all the different prescribed? There is something common about it. And this is from text 39 onwards. Now, sometimes people get a little confused because of the words that are used in this section. However, I would like you to know that all of them are more or less synonymous. I'm going to list these words. And they are buddhi, yoga, buddhi yoga, yukta, pragya, stitta, dharma, the English word, duty, vyavasaya, Atmika, Vyavasayatmika, Atmavan, Karmani, Brahmanasya, Samadhi, Dhi, and more. These are all words that are more or less synonymous. And Srila Prabhupada is the amazing teacher who takes away the mystery away from these words and reduces them to their essence, which is that it is about Krishna consciousness. It is Krishna consciousness. Now, of course, it is my task to explain how each of these words actually are Krishna consciousness and not something else as we come across these words. Now, specifically in the first of these verses, text 39, Krishna is going to explain one specific quality about Krishna consciousness, which he considers important to mention right in the beginning. And Srila Prabhupada uses this word, which is kind of rare English word, but it's very meaningful. That specific quality of Krishna consciousness is that it is prophylactic and antiseptic. Now, what that means in the context of sinful activities is that it nullifies that Krishna consciousness, performing Krishna consciousness within one's prescribed duty, knowing that he is the soul and not the body, it does two things. It immunizes him from his past sinful activities, and it immunizes him against falling down or frees him from bondage to material life. This is a very important point here. So please bear all this in mind and we will proceed. Eshate bihita sankhe buddhir yoge to imam shrinu buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandham rahasyasi. So now Krishna is attributing a quality to this performance of one's prescribed duty without considering loss or gain. Now remember from yesterday, this detachment from loss or gain, victory or defeat, is because you're acting on behalf of the Supreme Personality of God. You're not acting on your own behalf. Therefore you can be detached. Otherwise, by nature, you are very attached. You're invested in the outcome. So now Krishna uses that ability to do this as buddhya yukta, to be engaged intelligently or to be engaged in Krishna consciousness. Now I'm going to describe some of the word meanings and some of their other corollary meanings that attach to them. Abhihita. Abhihita means described. Esha te abhihita. What I just described to you, O Arjuna, what I've just declared, what I've told you about, what I've spoken of, that's what abhihita means, what I've just told you. Sankhya, sankhya. So Prabhupada says by analytical study, it's worth noting that the root word for sankhya is kya, kya. Kya means to count, to enumerate, to sum up, to calculate. And it has another meaning. It means conflict, battle and war. So both meanings are meaningful here. In your struggle, O Arjun, what I've just described to you, and also all that I've described to you analytically, by counting, by enumerating, by giving you a complete breakdown, this is called buddhi yoga. So then another word is of course yukta. Yukta means Prabhupada writes dovetailed. We can understand it to be actually engaged, to do this, to act in this way of life, to act in this understanding that one is not the body, one is performing one's prescribed duties, and he's doing it without being attached to the results. And prahasyasi, that you can be released from what? Karma bandham, the bondage of fruitive reaction. So praha is the root word for prahasyasi, which means to leave, to desert, to go away, to abandon, to give up something. So you can go away from your karma. You can leave it behind. You can distance yourself. Otherwise, it binds you. You cannot. But by this art, by this secret of buddhi yoga, you can do so. The translation, thus far, Esha, I have described this knowledge about actually now the word Krishna consciousness, to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So it's important to note that when you act in such knowledge, it is not the knowledge itself, it is not intellectual awareness of this idea, oh, okay, there's an idea. You actually have to live by it. You have to do it. That famous phrase, just do it, precedes Nike. Srila Prabhupada used to say, just do it. And this is what he's referring to. That don't just think about it, don't just talk about it, but actually do it. So this is the beginning of the science of Krishna consciousness. the foundation has been laid that we're not the body, that life's purpose is to execute our prescribed duties. Now, with this understanding, Krishna consciousness begins. So, you have to also note that in this particular verse, Prabhupada has translated the phrase Buddhi Yoga as working without fruitive results. Now think about it. Buddhi Yoga doesn't contain any of these phrases of working or without or with fruitive or results. It doesn't contain. But actually it captures the actual meaning. Because why? Krishna himself is calling what he has spoken of so far, he is labeling all that as Buddhi Yoga. Therefore, Prabhupada is very correct in saying it is called working without fruitive results. So this also anticipates the actual meaning that Krishna is going to invest in this word as the verses that follow soon. Prabhupada says, according to the Nirukti, the Vedic dictionary, Sankhya means that which describes things in details, and Sankhya, yeah, you notice the difference? Sankhya, the first one, the last A is long, and the other Sankhya, the first A is very long, Sankhya, is the philosophy which describes the real nature of the soul. So that's the Sankhya. And yoga, of course, means controlling the senses. And now Prabhupada is summing up, in reference to these words, Sankhya Yoga, that Arjuna's proposal not to fight was based on sense gratification. Forgetting his prime duty, he wanted to cease fighting. Why did he do this? Why did he come to this determination? Because he thought he will be happier by doing this. And so we have to understand there are two contentions, there are two options in life. One is the path of Krishna consciousness, the other is the path of sense gratification. They may take on various flavors, but they boil down to these two paths in essence. So the intelligent person, he's able to understand the essence. Sometimes the path of sense gratification, people will opt to do opposite things. But they both are based on what pleases me, my desires. So really, although opposite activities, they share the same way of thinking. So yoga is different. And yoga, of course, also doesn't mean the opposite of any material. It's the basis upon which you choose to act. That's different. So in yoga, of course, the paramount significant feature is control of the senses and not to act for one's, the pleasure of one's senses, the demands of one's senses. So now Prabhupada, he summarizes Sankhya, the first A, very long, Sankhya. Krishna therefore wanted to explain to Arjuna that, 2 points, by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper. That's one. You're not the body, you're the soul. And the second point is, that all individual persons, including the Lord himself, are eternal individuals. There are individuals in the past and there are individuals in the present. So in the Sankhya's presentation, Krishna was saying 2 things. One is the soul cannot be killed, but also the soul is an individual living being. He is not a product of matter. And that's a very significant point. People, sometimes what happens is they replace one form of misunderstanding with another misunderstanding. They conclude, okay, the mistake is I'm thinking I'm the body, but then we're all God. Or something. Something foolish. Another mistake. So Prabhupada is saying that in Sankhya, in the discussion so far up to text 39, Krishna has elaborately explained that all the souls are individual beings and eternally so. He says, we simply change our bodily dress in different manners, but actually we keep our individuality even after liberation from the bondage of material dress. So this now is Sankhya. This is the explanation, analytical explanation of understanding things. Prabhupada then also, he comments on that this Sankhya, this yoga that Krishna has given to Arjuna, because the name is being shared by another philosopher called atheistic Kapila, it should not be confused to be thought that that's the same. They're too different. Long before this Sankhya, Srila Prabhupada writes, has nothing to do with Sankhya philosophy of the atheist Kapila. Long before the imposter Kapila's Sankhya, Sankhya philosophy was expounded in the Srimad Bhagavatam by the true Lord Kapila. So you see, this is where confusion can come up. There's two Kapilas and there's two Sankhya philosophies, but they're both different. One is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there's another philosopher by the name Kapila. And he also spoke of Sankhya, which is completely atheistic. He actually is akin to the modern-day scientist who is called the theory of reductionism. You reduce everything down to its essential components. And by this process, what they do is they make a leap where the components upon which let's say a human being is supposed to be built, they presume to be atoms, but the human has sentient, has cognizance. The atoms do not have this quality. And this was actually quite a, first of all, it was a challenge to Prabhupada's disciples, early disciples. And it was a big challenge. It's amazing how Srila Prabhupada was able to boldly challenge science, all of science. So everyone was nervous. So Prabhupada said, okay, since you believe you have analyzed all the components of a living being, when I give you a dead living being, put your component and bring it alive. That's the natural consequence if you think everything is made up of little atomic particles. So Kapila, this atheist Kapila, has the same notion, he has the same idea. It's very powerful, really, if you think about it. That there's only so many chemicals in the periodic table. Tell me which one, I'll give it to you. Put it in a dead body, bring it alive. See, just like when one of these machines stop working, because it's only made up of certain components, an engineer is able to make it work again. He takes out the part that doesn't work. But you cannot do that with a living body. There's no such component. Quite a profound point. So now, going back to the actual Sankhya, which Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, he says, Prabhupada writes, it is clearly explained by him. He makes 3 points, Srila Prabhupada says. Number one, that there is the Purusha, or the Supreme Lord, who is active and creates. So, see, the same principle of what are the components of everything. In the spiritual Sankhya, there is not only the understanding of the 24 gross elements, there's also elements, these elements, by the way, include mind, intelligence and ego. But there is also the soul and the Supreme Personality of God. So in this Sankhya, there is number one, the Purusha, the Supreme Lord, who is active and He creates. So the second point is that individual souls who work for sense gratification under the spell of material energy, they also think they're the enjoyers. In other words, that's the second point. See, in this Sankhya, Lord Kapila is truly nicely analyzing the situation. You have the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is an individual and who creates everything, this material nature. And within this creation are other individual living souls who are enamored by this material energy and think within that sphere, within that arena, they think they are the enjoyers. And Prabhupada writes, this mentality is dragged to the last point of liberation when the living entity wants to become one with the Lord, which is the last nerve of the illusion of Maya. Third point is that after many, many births of such sense gratificatory activities, one of these souls entrapped in this sphere of material nature, he surrenders unto Krishna. So that's Lord Kapila's Sankhya, as opposed to the atheistic materialist scientist's idea of how things operate. This, Krishna says, I have given you this analytical understanding of what to do, what not to do. Now I'm going to tell you about karma. So Prabhupada is just summarizing nicely how that all we have learned up to text 39 is also what Lord Kapila teaches in Srimad Bhagavatam. Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as his spiritual master by surrendering himself unto him. Consequently, Krishna will now tell him about the working process in Buddhi Yoga or Karma Yoga. So now Prabhupada says, or in other words, the practice of devotional service. So you see, when I prefaced the class by saying all these words are synonymous, Srila Prabhupada is saying that exact point. Krishna is about to tell him about Buddhi Yoga or Karma Yoga, means it is equal to, or in other words, it's the same as devotional service. And he uses the interesting phrase, devotional service, as working for the sense gratification of the Lord. See, here we are in Maya, in material energy, working for our own sense gratification. Sense gratification per se is not wrong. But whose sense gratification are we gratifying? Are we serving? The whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to gratify, to serve the senses of Krishna. That's the point. Sense gratification is not itself bad, but to whom is it directed is the determining factor. So this, Prabhupada says, this particular science of gratifying Krishna's senses is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10. Tesha, Satata, Bhajata, Purvakam, Dadami, Bhuti, Yogata. Okay, so, and Prabhupada uses this wonderful phrase here. This Buddhi Yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord. So Buddhi Yoga, not only is it devotional service, but Prabhupada is specifically using this phrase, direct communion with the Lord. here it is, the living entity, if he wants, he can gratify the senses of the Lord because he's in direct touch with the Lord. In other words, it's not theoretical. It's real. The Lord, the person, will tell you what he would like for me to do. That is called Buddhi Yoga. So, sometimes we have our own notion of what is devotional service. We think I'm engaged in certain practices, therefore I'm in devotional service. But the actual feature of devotional service is that you are doing what the Supreme Lord wants you to do. That presupposes you're able to hear him. It presupposes you're in touch with him. You know, like, hello, you know, like you talk to another person. So, without having such direct communion, this idea of serving the senses or devotional service as Prabhupada is describing is not really there. Now, I say this again and again, I'll say it one more time. It behooves us that we are clear that that's my goal. It's not some going through some motion, some mechanical activity. You know you are in devotional service when you're in direct touch with the Lord and he tells you what he wants. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. So it is not to be had by anyone and everyone. You have to have some qualification, which is devotional service. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service to the Lord, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to the stage of Bhakti Yoga by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only to those who are always engaged in devotional service, out of transcendental love, does he award the pure knowledge of devotion in love. So, just in case you got lost, what was the significant part of this sentence was, this last sentence, who engage in some activity pleasing to Krishna out of a sense of love for him. It is the sense of love that is important. To such a person who has this loving feeling, Krishna awards him this communion. He will talk to that person. So in other words, just to recap, devotional service is not a particular object or activity. However, it is almost any object and activity when there is a feeling, a loving feeling for Krishna. That's the, you know, essence. Now, if you can remember that, if you can retain that, you're making good progress there, you know, because now it starts to make sense more and more as we go along. Prabhupada finishes this section by saying, in that way the devotee can reach him easily in the ever blissful kingdom of God. Yena mam upayanti te. So now going back to this particular verse, Buddhi Yoga mentioned herein in this verse means the devotional service of the Lord. This devotional service, the one where there's loving feeling behind one's activities for Krishna. And that's number one. And second point is the word Sankhya mentioned herein has nothing to do with the atheistic Sankhya Yoga. So that finishes that part. I won't go into all of the purport. You're welcome to read it yourself. It goes at greater length, making the distinction between the atheistic Sankhya, the one given by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. We come to another part of the purport which is worth commenting on. Actually, before I do that, there's one part still referring to the Dhammi Bodhi Yogam Dham. Prabhupada writes, "By such transcendental engagement, one achieves all transcendental understanding automatically by the grace of the Lord." So he is paraphrasing that part, the Dhammi Bodhi Yoga. In other words, because somebody is engaging in serving Krishna with a loving feeling, Krishna gives him whatever understanding he needs. The devotee, such a person, doesn't have to make a separate endeavor. He doesn't have to go to the library to become educated separately on any issue. Krishna makes up for all his needs, anything he needs to know. And thus his liberation is complete in itself without his making extraneous endeavors to acquire that knowledge or any kind of knowledge. That's a very significant point to remember. In other words, devotional service is complete in itself and doesn't need any other endeavor to round it off. Sometimes this question is raised that, well, it's all very well to have spiritual life, but what about my other duties? What about... Actually, if you do Krishna consciousness properly, there will be nothing remaining that is still to be dealt with, has to be attended to. It will already have served its purpose. That's the true art of Krishna consciousness. Okay, now Prabhupada spends some time to explain the word work, W-O-R-K. There is a difference between work in Krishna consciousness and work for fruitive results. In other words, both are work, but both are some kind of effort, endeavor, but there's a difference between these two particular kinds. Buddhi yoga is the transcendental quality of the work that we perform. So Buddhi yoga, that means, is not the work itself, but it's the transcendental quality behind that work that determines whether it's Buddhi yoga or not. So that's the significant point. This transcendental quality, if it's missing, then it's not Buddhi yoga. It's actually as simple as that. You have to have this transcendental quality, this quality that I am doing it for Krishna because I have a loving feeling for Krishna. Now, somebody may say, well, perhaps you're making too much of this. Well, actually, Krishna himself will devote some verses explaining this very same point. In other words, there's a great distinction between these two kinds of endeavors. Text 40. Now, text 40 and 41, before I begin them, it's interesting to note the role they play in the context of what we've just been discussing. Krishna, in text 40, he is going to talk about a person who adopts this transcendental quality of work to a small degree. And in text 41, he is going to talk about a person who adopts this transcendental quality of work, this Buddhi Yoga, to a very high degree. Okay? So the first one is a small degree. He is using the word su-alpa, only a little bit. Alpa means very small. Su-alpa means even smaller than small. Insignificant. Just a touch. Just a shade. Just a little bit. So, Krishna says, Neha abhi kravana shasti. There is no nasha, no destruction, no loss of what? Pratyavaya, of the endeavor, of the pratyavaya, excuse me, asti, or diminution. There is neither loss nor diminution, na, pratyavaya na, of what? Su-alpam, even a small amount, small fraction of this endeavor, dharmasya, trayate, mahat. It's, in other words, the benefit of even a small amount frees you from fear. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, pratyavaya, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So here's the point. This benefit accrues to a person not one who has a theoretical idea of Krishna consciousness, but who abhikrama, who actually did something in this way. He once, with a loving feeling, served Krishna. Only once. Only even accidentally. By chance. Somehow or other, he just did some activity, not for sense gratification, but for the sense gratification of Krishna. That person, he immediately becomes freed from the most dangerous type of fear. Mahata Tayag. Not ordinary fear, the greatest fear. Okay. So, Prabhupada writes. And you see, Prabhupada, he is continuing his theme from the last purport. Activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. He is defining what is transcendental quality. Means to act for the benefit of Krishna without expecting personal bodily benefit. So even a small amount of such an activity, and remember, it is an activity. Something has to be done. Two things happen. No impediment. It meets no impediment. And even a small beginning of it, even a, is not actually lost. So that's what means na nasha asti. It, in other words, you only did it once, you only did it slightly, and there may be a gap of doing other foolish things, but what you did back then, you never lost, ever. And neither does it diminish. Like sometimes you have 100,000 rupees in the bank, so Even if some or other you don't spend it, in time the value diminishes. Inflation. 100,000 rupees 50 years ago is worth much less than what it was worth 50 years ago. Today. So it's different. So there's neither diminution nor loss of that activity. Time will not diminish it. But it has to be this transcendental quality, this activity for pleasing Krishna. And even slightly, even just slightly. So what does this mean? There's a subtext to this. This is very encouraging. You know, this is very enthusing. I just do a little. In other words, if by a little bit you get this benefit, how much more for doing more than a little bit? This is, we're talking about the benefit of a person, very slight. And it's so much, already he has this kind of benefit. So the question comes, if I do a little substantial service to Krishna, not slight, it, you know, it begs this question, what kind of benefit must accrue? Because a slight one saved you from the greatest danger. So, that's very nice. Prabhupada cites the example of Ajamil. He performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. And Prabhupada cites the wonderful verse from Srimad Bhagavatam as given by Narada Muni to Vyasadeva. Tattva sadharmam charanam bhujam hare bhajanna pakvota patettato yadi yatra kvabhadram abhutamushyakim kovartapto bhajatam sadharmata. If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? What can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? We need to explain this a little bit. Remember, in karma everything is transient. It doesn't stay. Good activities, bad activities, they have their results and they expire. So in the face of that, if you do an activity that never expires, that is far greater than all the temporary things. Do you follow? Right? If you have something that never expires, and if it's only a little bit, it's greater than a whole lot. One time Srila Prabhupada, Tripavanath Prabhu told me this example. He said, the journalists, they said, your disciples tell me that the guru, the acharya, he knows everything. Prabhupada said, yes, that's correct. Krishna knows everything, so the spiritual master knows everything. He said, oh? So how many windows in the Empire State Building? How many windows in the Empire State Building? So, I have a habit that before I go to the next point, I challenge myself, do I know the answer? I'm like completely, you know, completely dumbfounded. And Srila Prabhupada said, how many drops of water in a mirage? Just astounding. How many drops of water in a dream? I mean, well, it's like, it's so perfect. So we can do all kinds of material activities, but they amount to what? Punarjanma. Again and again. They do not amount to anything. That's the actual truth. Whereas if you have, even by chance, slightly done pure devotional service, time cannot erode it, cannot diminish it, cannot destroy it. Just like the soul cannot be destroyed. Just like the soul. It's amazing. So sometimes, you see, we have this unfortunate habit that we read Srimad Bhagavatam, but we do not believe in it. If someone gives up his occupational duties, we think, oh, how can you even entertain such a thing? and works in Krishna consciousness, and then falls down. Not only, oh, he's a perfect. No, he becomes fallen. He's not exemplary. He falls down on account of not completing his work. What loss? Narada Muni raises the question, what did he lose? What exactly is his loss? It's a way, in Sanskrit, this question is called rhetorical. It's a way of saying, he does not lose anything. It's a statement. That person did not lose anything. And the other person, he did not gain anything. Who did it perfectly. Temporary material activities. There's no gain. In other words, the gain of doing your prescribed duties is that you may be able to do Krishna consciousness. That's the gain. The whole idea of your prescribed duties is to be able to do Krishna consciousness. If you fail to do Krishna consciousness, then all of that was shrama eva hi kevalam, waste of time. And Prabhupada ends the purport by saying, this is the unique quality of work in Krishna consciousness. This is the unique. This is the point. We should understand. So now, text 41, and I will finish here. Maybe I'll have to begin this next time because it's a little elaborate. Text 41, so it's about the person who adopts Buddhi Yoga Yukta. He engages in devotional service resolutely, not slightly, not su alpam. First one was su alpam, little bit. This is resolute. Vyavasaya atmika. His determination is the personification. His whole life is the personification of Krishna consciousness. Who is the example of the personification of determined Krishna consciousness? D-H-R-U. Thank you. Finally. I had to spell it all the way. Dhruva Maharaj. So first was Ajamu. He slightly did it, but he benefited. There was no loss. Now we're going to talk about the person who takes up Krishna consciousness fully, 100%. Next time. I won't be able to finish. This is far too big. Thank you very much for your patience. Are there any questions? There's a mic probably behind you.
In short, yoga is serves for Krishna with love. It's all only that.
I didn't hear the first word you said.
Buddhi yoga.
Right.
It's a service for Krishna with love. Just that.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Everyone's fairly silent today. Which could be a good sign, but then usually it's a worrying sign.
Well, it would be good to add to his question that...
Can we have a microphone? Your stuff. Use two hands and pull it apart. I'll come, it's okay.
I think it would be good to add, since he mentioned Buddhi Yoga, to say, of course, it's devotional service to with love for Krishna, but also using your complete intelligence, not only from emotion, but using your complete intelligence.
Actually, thank you for bringing that up. Buddha yoga literally means that yoga done by the help of your intelligence. And it needed to have been clarified. So here's the point. Devotional service has the nature that it employs one's intelligence. However, there has to be a distinction. There is mundane intelligence and therefore non-mundane, meaning transcendental intelligence. Prabhupada tried to explain that by explaining the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Dham. It's that kind of intelligence which comes from Krishna. In other words, it's not concocted. It's not a mental speculation. So, in other words, we're actually going to learn what it means, yoga done with intelligence. Because our presumption is, well, I'm intelligent, I'm pretty good, you know. I have an IQ of 1, whatever. I have some IQ, I have some ability. We're very proud. And then we think that's what Buddha Yoga is. Not really. It's the kind of intelligence that is born of one's connection with Krishna. And where Krishna reciprocates. Krishna guides you. In other words, it's not born of your own endeavor. It's like the intelligence, if you like to use the word, that a child will get from his parents. It's not of the child. But because the child has put himself in the hands of his parents, it's the parents' intelligence that's now coming into play. So it's the same dynamic that takes place. When a person does Buddhi Yoga, he gets the guidance of Krishna rather than his own. However, see, we may be very intelligent actually, but it's not sufficient for this material energy. It's not enough. No mind of intelligence of our own can overcome material energy. We do require Krishna's. So that's Buddha Yoga. Very important that you bear that in mind. But thank you for bringing it up. Can you pass the mic? I'll take...
You have to come here because it's in not going
north.
You just, yeah, just stand there.
Can't you take 2 hands?
No. Very, very tangled.
It's really a mess.
Is it on? Is the switch on?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, here it's mentioned, it's not very clear to me, that the Sankhya, which is described by Lord Kapila in Bhagavatam, is not even that which is being mentioned here.
What Krishna gives is a kind of summary of what Lord Kapila gives in Bhagavatam, yes.
That even that is not being...
Yes, Prabhupada also says, he says, even that is not the point, he says in the purport. But the point is they're both talking about the same Sankhya though. In other words, the one which includes the understanding of the soul and the Supreme Lord. The atheistic Sankhya does not have the soul and the Supreme Lord. That's the difference. Does that make sense?
There is some kind of distinction, it seems, but it is like...
Yeah, Prabhupada is saying...
Krishna's and Lord Kapila's and Bhagavatam.
Yeah, there is a difference. In other words, Lord Kapila's Sankhya is not the actual subject of the Bhagavad Gita, but they are both the correct type of Sankhya Yoga. Both.
The one which is in Bhagavatam?
Yes. Yes. They're both... Let me use the word compatible. Does that make sense? I'm asking, did it make sense? Compatible? Good, good. Yeah. Prabhuji, you'll have to come forward because the mic won't reach back.
Krishna says,
This is Thakur Haridas Prabhu of the fame.
Oh,
I told you of the infinite
Krishna,
theory. And I said if anybody wants to learn, they should go to him to ask more questions.
What is that?
All my students found it interesting about the infinite theory, which I know very little about.
Hare Krishna. Anyway, regarding Sankhya Yoga, in the fifth chapter, Krishna says that Sankhya Yoga Pritag Balaha Pravadantina Panditaha, that Sankhya Yoga and devotional service.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
Right. Correct. Did we indicate that there was? I'm asking you. Did you get the feeling that?
If they're not only compatible.
Oh no, no. Compatible was with Lord Kapila's Sankhya, and what Krishna has spoken. He said, "I've spoken to you was Sankhya so far." They're compatible. They're not exactly the same. Prabhupada writes that in the purport. He said, even that Sankhya is not what is referred in the purport. He says,
I see.
That's. But thank you for that.
Yeah, he also says that I have explained this from the analytical point of view, and now I.
Yeah. It's on.
Yes. Put it in my mouth, okay. So. He says that I have spoken this from the analytical point of view,
right.
And now I will speak from the point of view of not being attached to the fruitive results
of your work.
Yeah. So there's different points of view of the same knowledge.
Not so much different points of view, but it's another consideration. In other words, Krishna wants Arjuna and us to learn to understand from the point of view of analytical study. What we should do, what we shouldn't do. And also, from this point of view of not being attached to work, there's also a way of understanding what we should do, what we shouldn't do.
And so, also, from the devotional point of view.
Which is the essence of... that's not really a third point. That's the essence of the second one.
Oh.
That's the point. Krishna is... This is where we've come. The first... 9 verses to 39, 31 to 38, they explained, you know, working without attachment. But the essence of working without attachment is Buddhi Yoga. Now this is where we've entered.
Someone else had a question?
Yes, yes. See, that's where Prabhupada uses the word, that's the transcendental quality of work. In other words, there is an ingredient, a transcendental ingredient within work, which is very beautiful, very attractive, very, very spiritual. That's the point. But sometimes people think it's separate from work. It's actually part of work. It's part of your swadharma. The essence of swadharma is where you're able to do it for Krishna's sense of gratification. But here's the problem, where the problem takes place. People think this is Swadharma, and there's a contending thing called devotional service, but they're not in competition. Using your language, Swadharma is the universal set, and pure devotional service is a subset. At least that's how it's been presented. It's not actually competing. It's that part of doing one's devotional service which not only are you detached, but you're doing it for Krishna. That's my... Amongst great sages, I have to say very humbly, this is the point of the whole thing that Krishna at least is saying. I'm saying this in a polite fashion because I've noticed this is overlooked. This is overlooked. We have a tendency to think there's prescribed duties and there's devotional service. That's not true. They're not separate. And the verse by Narada Muni explained that, that if you forget the, it's a bit like Rupa Goswami's verse, Niyamagraha. The purpose of doing rules and regulations is devotional service. If, in other words, but you can't do devotional service without the rules. It's part of it. But that's what they're for. The rules and regulations are for doing devotional service. They're not on their own, separate. That's all. I hope it's clear. Almost as mud, but I hope it's clear.
Krishna Prabhuji. So here it is stated that if someone gives up his occupational duty and takes the Krishna consciousness, and then even if he falls down and he will get nothing lost, and he'll get next birth as human being and Allah.
Doesn't exactly say that, but point is, he does not lose anything.
Yeah, yeah. My thing is that, my question is that, like in Narasingh Dev promised to Prahlad Maharaj, and like if somebody become a devotee, in, like in like 21 generation will be like elevated or something like that.
Yes.
So like if he is elevated himself, and if he performs his whole like Krishna consciousness like duties, then there will be a chance. Or if he falls down, then how? What about their 21 generations and all?
Somebody's thinking. That's good. This is called thinking. Very good. Prahlad Maharaj, about the so many generations before and after, is referring actually to a pure devotee of the Lord. And so we can say it's proportionate to one's level of devotion. Everyone benefits. It's proportionate to one's... that's the general principle, ye yatha mam prapadyante. So Krishna reciprocates according to our proportion of surrender. But you should understand the principle, why it is others benefit who did not do devotional service. Because this ties in with once when I first heard it. I heard it from a devotee who's passed away now, starting with P. Used to live here, walked a little, but he moved to Mayapur.
Padma Lochan.
He explained one time why it is that people who are born in Vrindavan, they go back to Godhead, even if they are just apparently ordinary karmis. So he explained that by material conditioning, everyone is attached to the place of their birth. Their place of birth happens to be Vrindavan. So even the material conditioning is making them attached to what in essence is Narayane, Ante Narayane Smriti, the Supreme Lord and His abode. So the same principle applies when a pure devotee is there. People are attached to their offspring. Who is their offspring? Pure devotee. Do you now see? So even their material conditioning is actually elevating them. So that's why so many generations benefit. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I have another one question there.
Yeah.
Like how in the beginning of devotional service as a Nevapati devotee, that how we can understand that communion with the Krishna, that you are saying that one has to come up to that level, one has to qualify that to understand that communion feeling with Krishna and all this, you're saying.
There are two factors in establishing communion with Krishna. One is to engage in actual activity, that's called devotional activity. The other is to have a feeling behind those devotional activities. That establishes a communion. Sometimes people are just sentimental but won't do anything. They'll invest their energies in material activities, but they may have some sentiment. you know, God is great, you know, something. But there are those who will mechanically do all the rituals, but their affection is not there. So that's where all things go, not perfect. But if you can combine both factors nicely, then it's a bit like the electric circuit, you know. This has to be there, this also has to be there. Then you have a complete circuit, you see. Complete flow. If you might have all these parts right, but one other part not connected, then, you know, this. So it's like that. Both elements have to be there, in place. And that's what we're learning. See, that's why I cautioned when Prabhuji, it started from there. We need to engage in our occupational duties. But the essence of the occupational duty is this loving feeling for Krishna. Otherwise, the occupational duty is meaningless. It has no meaning of its own. Is that okay? Thank you. It takes a while for everyone to... Because if I'm abrupt, we say jai, then go away. Usually that happens after I say jai, and then people come to the... speak about it afterwards. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shila Prabhupada.